Good afternoon. Welcome to the City of Morro Bay's Citizen Finance Advisory Committee, regular meeting of February 20th, 2018, and the time is 3:30. We do have a quorum. In addition to myself, John Martin, we have Bart Beckman, David Batant, and John Irwin. Walter Heath, Don Addis, and Barbara Spagnola are absent. We also have the city management team here. And so, first thing on the agenda is Pledge of Allegiance. Please join me. Are there any committee member announcements or presentations? Okay, seeing none, we'll move on to public comment period. Now, this period is set aside for members of the public to comment on things that are not on the agenda. There will be a time under each agenda item for the public to comment, but if there's something not on the agenda you'd like to address to the committee, this would be the time. Okay, seeing none. We'll go on to the consent calendar. Approval of the minutes for the January 16th, 2018 Regular Citizens Oversight Finance Advisory Committee meeting. Any changes or questions on the minutes? Okay, then I'll entertain a motion to approve the minutes.
Okay. I motion that the minutes be approved.
I'll second.
Okay. Approved and seconded. All those in favor? Aye. Okay. Item B1 under business items, a brief finance department update on the audit, budget, staffing, open gov, and the CSMFO. This will be Jennifer Calloway, finance director. Thank you, Jennifer.
Thank you. Good afternoon. I'll try to keep this brief. That seems like a lot of items under there. So for audit, obviously you didn't get a CAFR to review by the end of January. We're still in progress. The statistical section is done. The MDA we can't do until we have finalized financials. Sandy is daily going through and kind of ticking off. We have drafts now, but she has found some discrepancies between our system and what they have in the draft, so we have to make sure they match, and so it's just a necessity to do that at this point. And they do keep straggling in with requests, so the last conversation that her and I had together with the auditors, we told them it needed to be ready for our March meeting. That deadline set, we're not going beyond that, because we have to move forward is what we explained to them. So that will be on the agenda for your March 20th meeting, and then it'll follow on the council meeting, which I guess would be March 27th. And so that's the audit update. I should have introduced, this is Sandy Martin. I'm not sure if the committee has met her or not. She's our budget and finance accounting manager. She's been with the city for about a year and a half, almost, just shy of that. So she's joining us today. So thank you, Sandy. And then an update on budget. We've started the budget process. We had two all-employee meetings last week to engage the employees in the development of the budget and our approach this year. It's no surprise that we're going to have a projected deficit at this point, so have asked the employees to participate in any ideas that they have. You know, people out in the field see things very differently than we do sitting at our desk, so we've had some good conversation already and are going to continue having that. We've also engaged the director level team in developing some additions to the budget document, such as performance metrics and goals and accomplishments, and our idea is to really be able to correlate the budget numbers with what services you're getting, so you can see what you're paying for in the budget for 18-19. So we're working on that, and that is what we plan to present, at least in draft form, to you in March to kind of get some feedback on if it's helpful or useful or not. So just wanted to update you on that. From a staffing perspective, the finance department yet again has experienced staffing change. Monique, who was here last time, had an amazing job opportunity down in Palm Springs to become deputy city clerk. So she has transitioned now, and Tracy McConnell is on staff taking Monique's place. Tracy's doing business license in TOT, just as Monique was, but she comes with a background in utility billing from Cambria, so she's also has that knowledge and is able to help support the two account clerks at the front desk that do utility billing, as they're both pretty new as well. So Tracy's done great so far. There was about 3.5 days of cross-training with Monique, which is doesn't seem like a lot, but actually was, I think, more than Monique got. So we were happy that we were able to make that work, and she seems to be picking up on it pretty quickly. I'm going to go to the CSMFO conference next. Valerie, who the committee met a couple times ago, I think in December, she and I are leaving tomorrow morning to go down to Riverside for the CSMFO conference. I think these conferences are invaluable with the information you gain, and particularly Val, who's fairly new to government, will be able to meet some other of her colleagues that she'll be able to connect with and reach out to for questions, which is always helpful. We have a meeting scheduled at 1 o'clock tomorrow afternoon with our PERS actuary, something new that they're doing this year at the conference in light of all the PERS issues. So we were able to get that scheduled and have a discussion with the actuary, particularly on the most recent news of the change in the amortization from 30 to 20 years and what that impact is going to mean for Morro Bay. So we'll talk a little bit more about that, I think, when we do the 10-year forecast. But we're looking forward to that conference and that particularly tomorrow. And then lastly, the OpenGov, it took a little bit longer to finalize negotiations with OpenGov, but we do have a contract at this point. And we had, Val and I had a kickoff conference with them last week on Friday. They're going to be sending us some kind of templates of the data download that they need. They're also going to CSMFO, so at this point we'll get that to them early in the next week when we get back and touch base with them. We have a meeting scheduled for next Friday. So now that the contract's negotiated, hopefully things will move forward a little more quickly with that, and we can get that deployed for everybody. I think that's it for my brief update.
Any questions, Bart?
Just to anticipate what... Can you hear me? Can you? Other than me talking?
Yeah.
the deficit. Now, we've got to have a balanced budget. So will you take the initiative, you staff take the initiative to identify what to cut or possible more revenues? So what we'll see basically will not show a deficit. In other words, it'll be balanced, but you'll show what you had to do to get there.
Correct. And for item four, we're going to have kind of a conversation about our 10-year forecast and where we're at right now, so maybe it can go into a little bit more at that point.
Any questions from the rest of the committee? Any questions from the public? Okay. So there's no action on this. Thank you for the information, Jennifer. And we'll move on to the next item, which is a review of the fiscal year 17-18 second quarter budget performance report for the six-month period ending December 31st, 2018. Jennifer?
Thank you. This is the draft report. There will be some modifications prior to issuing it to the council, so I just want to highlight those so the committee knows. The TBID analysis is not in here at this point, so that will get added. We'll also incorporate Measure Q from the next item into the same format, so it's one comprehensive document for the City Council. In addition, We've engaged conversations with our actuary from CalPERS specifically on cost savings if we were to pay down our last side fund, which is for the fire employees, the tier one, just over $300,000. There is some savings to doing so. We requested payoff amounts for March 1st and the end of June, so it would go into effect for July. If we pay off by March 1st, it's about $7,000 difference from if we do it in June, which is small, but considering that we have enough cash on hand, it might make sense to do that. So we plan to include that as a recommendation with the mid-year update to council. That's not in here because everything with PERS seems to be evolving on a daily basis, so the information came in at the end of last week, and I didn't have time to fully vet that in order to get it in this report for you. So I wanted to make the committee aware that I would be adding that to the council meeting report. In addition, Rob is going to be adding an update on CIP projects, and he's drafting that now. So that will be incorporated as part of the council discussion. What you have before you is a similar format as the first quarter report that seemed to work well. We've added information on the WHARF project to date, as well as the enterprise funds. And then, as I mentioned, Measure Q and TBID will be added as well. There's a couple big stories here with the report. The first is that it was discussed during a council meeting. I'm not sure we discussed it here at this level, but when we did the first quarter report, our business tax was budgeted at a much higher number than traditionally has come in, over $500,000, and our annual receipts are about $320 to $340. We are able to trace that back to when the city engaged with the municipal auditing services, I think was back in 15-16, and the idea was that we'd be auditing business license so that revenues would go up, and they built that into the budget and the forecast. We didn't realize that increase, and the MAS audit was not as successful or wasn't fully implemented as we had thought it would be, so our revenue trend has been consistent year over year in that $320,000 to $340,000 range. So we've made a budget recommendation to reduce revenues for business tax by about $184,000. The other big adjustment to revenues is with TOT. There was a 5% growth rate that was built into TOT based on prior year's actuals versus the 17-18 budget. That's about $200,000 more. When we look at actual receipts from the first 6 months of 16-17 to the first 6 months of this year, there's about a $100 difference. They're trending almost exactly the same. So that's why we've recommended a budget reduction in TOT of $200,000 as well. I think I did mention with the first quarter report that we don't typically do third quarter reports. But in light of those two big revenue adjustments, we are committed to doing a third quarter report. It could change, but it just right now, based on the trends, this is what we're seeing, and we need to adjust our revenues accordingly at this point to try to remain as balanced as possible. There's another large revenue adjustment, and that is for the fire services. We received about $390,000 in reimbursements for our mutual aid that we provided for the fires down south and the landslide. $253,000 of that is a direct offset to overtime. So they kind of helped to balance some of the budget out, but not all of the budget. We're going to talk a little bit about that in a minute. I think I'll just summarize some of the revenue and expenditure adjustments first and then go into a little more detail on the reimbursements. We also have some significant increase in plan check fees. So that's great news. That means there's a lot of building activity or remodels going on in the city, more than was budgeted. So we have $70,000 increase for the fire department with the fire marshal on board. He's doing a lot of fire inspections. And then we have a $30,000 increase, or $10,000 increase for CDD and design review fees of $30,000, and those are all related together. So again, those are good news for the activity that's going on in the city right now. We also incorporated a $25,000 adjustment for sports fees. That is specifically for the pool and operation of the pool and what we're seeing come in from that. Going forward, we're going to create a new program, if you will. Under recreation, you'll notice it's divided into administration, youth services, teen services, and sports services. In order to more closely track the pool, the cost of the pool, in case there's any questions about that, we're going to create just a pool program that we can have staff charge their time to and track the revenues and expenses. So you'll see that come up. It's not an adjustment per se, other than the $25,000. We'll just be transferring whatever money was budgeted for the pool into that program. So I just wanted to make the committee aware of that. So total revenue adjustments are $173,851. That's found on page 15 of the attachment, if you're following along. If we move on to expenditures, when we realized we were going to have, well, the overall revenue adjustments are positive. It's because of the reimbursements from the CAL FIRE strike team support. When we realized that TOT and business tax were trending low, and the city manager elected to not fill the deputy city manager position at this point in order to help mitigate those revenue shortfalls and help balance the budget. So the salary and benefits for the DCM position, as well as the majority of the rest of that program, has been adjusted down and removed from the budget, or is being recommended to be. There's some small things that remain, like utilities or some of those things that are just kind of allocated based on the square footage in the building, and they total less than $2,000. So that recommendation is in here, and that's on page 15 under the account numbers. That's everything that's showing up as 3125. Those are all deputy city manager expenses. The other revenue or expenditure adjustment is $20,000 for contract services. That is for the HR department. It's a direct expense related to recruitments. Primarily, the city manager recruitment was an outside firm that was hired. So we need to account for the cost of that firm to do your recruitment for your city manager. The total general fund expenditure adjustments are $192,447. When you look at, there's detail as to all of the adjustments on page 16 and 17. And then when you get to page 19 and 20, you'll see kind of a summary by department and category. In the packets I handed out, there are replacement pages for you that capture the true second quarter costs on page 20. But based on these adjustments, we would project the year end to be in a deficit of just under $10,000. And that, again, is why we're definitely committed to doing a third quarter report, so we can see where we are in April and if we need to take more mitigating efforts at that point, or if our revenues are increasing beyond what we see as of December. In order to get to that $10,000 number, in addition to not filling the DCM position and essentially defunding that program for the rest of the year, we've really relied on the CAL FIRE reimbursements that are beyond the direct offsets to overtime and personnel. So we talked about the $390,000 that we have coming in from the strike team support as reimbursement, $253,000 of that being for personnel. The remaining is what we collected for administration, wear and tear on equipment, that kind of thing. In the past, I understand that the city has typically used those monies to balance the general fund if need be. As an ongoing practice, that's not what we would recommend doing. So we've made a recommendation to use the money this year to balance the general fund, coupled with the other adjustments that we've made, and help buy purchase some of that equipment for the fire department for Measure Q. And we'll talk about that during the Measure Q update. But that's kind of the connection between these two. And the chief is here to answer any specific questions about that as well. Other than that, property tax is trending about where we would want it to be. Sales tax, your city manager and I met with our sales tax consultant just last week, I think. It was very recently. And it's pretty much stagnant. Well, maybe gas is going up with the price of gas. Some other, you know, purchases or sales are coming down with discretionary spending. So it's pretty much stagnant. They're not forecasting any substantial increases for the rest of this year or next year. So we need to take that into account in our 10-year update and as we're budgeting for 18-19 as well. There were a number of questions that came in regarding the first quarter report. I provided those to the committee via email this afternoon and handed out a packet. It has replacement pages in there. If you want, I can go through the enterprise fund section, or we can go through some of the questions that related to general fund that came in. I don't want to mix the funds necessarily.
Yeah, let's do general fund first. And so if there are any questions by the members of the committee regarding the general fund report?
I guess I'd like to be clear that I understand with the fire department, and trust me, I support getting equipment one way or the other. So, but if I'm understanding this, basically we kind of made money off of the fire because of the reimbursements. Is that true? We basically have extra funds available for the general fund because of the way it's financially handled with the fire department, part of which is we get FEMA funds in excess of what we're actually reimbursing people. So in effect, if my understanding is correct, then we have enough money to fund the fire department. But my sense is what you're doing is you're using sort of the way Q can be explained as a way to balance the budget. But there is enough money seemingly in the general fund, if not more, to fund fire department needs based on what the fire department revenues are.
So I hesitate to say we make money off of it. We get a reimbursement and we get our direct overtime charges, and that's for the staff that go down to the fires, and then for covering shifts, I'm sorry, we get 20% for admin. So the fire department has administration costs for filling out the paperwork, to seek reimbursement. That person's there whether she's doing the paperwork for reimbursement or not. So you're not incurring extra cost because she's filling it out. It's part of her job, but we're getting some money to support that time. So if you want to think of that as making money, I guess you could, but it's really a reimbursement for her services that we just don't incur overtime for. And then there's equipment wear and tear that we're reimbursed for. In a perfect world, we take that money and put that in equipment replacement fund for that equipment, and that would be our recommendation. Normally, the general fund can't support purchasing the equipment for the fire department that they've asked for because of these shortfalls with the TOT and the business tax. When you know, they total about $400,000. So those shortfalls alone, we are recommending using Measure Q because it's a qualified purchase for Measure Q. In the past, I understand that the general fund has taken that reimbursement money and not bought fire equipment with it that maybe they should have. We don't think that's necessarily right. So this is kind of a one-time recommendation to help balance this year, and we need to figure out a better plan next year.
I'm still not sure I fully understand. It sounds like you didn't address, I don't think, what I had heard was, is that some of the people we send are reserve officers who we don't reimburse as much as FEMA reimburses us. Was that not true?
That might answer someone's question.
Good afternoon. Thank you for allowing me to talk, and thank you for what you guys are doing. And so how our California Firefighter CFFA agreement works is they actually have our wages by our Social Security number. So as we do our paperwork, we actually get reimbursed for the folks that go to the incident and also cover for the folks that are going out. We do get a 20% admin fee, but also in that is fees for our training, fees for administrating and maintaining our apparatus. So it is a very convoluted process that Dawn, she does a great job of making sure that our percentage is accurate, and it usually takes her about 30 hours every year to come up with this percentage, and we submit it to the state of California and the federal government. On replacement of our equipment as such, and Jennifer is totally correct that there has been times in the past where the funds that we do receive are needed in the general fund to help balance our budget, and that's just the way it is. Measure Q has been a godsave for the fire department for us, equipment replacement, and as you'll see through the years, we have a replacement schedule for our large equipment, or our, such as our heart monitors, hydraulic equipment pumps. We've been using Measure Q to help us with that to make sure we have a balanced general fund.
Okay, so I misunderstood as far as this. So the people who don't get paid as much, we literally only get whatever we pay them.
That's correct. They pay it at time and a half. So they know that either the person's at time and a half out in the field or time and a half back at the station. So it balances out.
Okay. So in other words, the information I had was incorrect on that issue. On the allowance for use of equipment, though, so it sounds like we are getting an allowance for equipment, but rather than sort of directing that for what you need, we're putting that in the general fund, and then we're taking Measure Q. Did I understand that correctly?
Would you call it an allowance?
If you see what I mean, we're getting allowance for equipment, but rather than somehow carving that out to use for fire equipment, it goes into the general fund, and then you're going over to Measure Q. And I do agree that Measure Q talks about things. I've talked about that one or two meetings ago, where it does seem like Measure Q is supposed to be to buy stuff, not for people. So that part of it is totally consistent with my understanding. But am I missing something on this sort of money that's collected that goes into a general fund, but then since you can use Q for fire department, you're doing that, rather than carving out this 20% adder for equipment?
So we're not... And Chief, if I'm wrong in saying this, correct me. We're not actually required to purchase the fire equipment that he's asked for and that we've suggested to be purchased from Measure Q. There's no legal requirement for us to use that money to purchase fire equipment. And that's why in the past it's been okay for them to use that to help balance the general fund. I think right now we're under the operating that that's not particularly fair. If they're going out and using their equipment, then it seems appropriate that the reimbursement should go towards fire equipment, but simply the general fund can't support it. So if we aren't able to use Measure Q money to buy it, we just won't purchase the equipment this year, because there's no excess general fund money to do that. Even though there's more reimbursement than overtime, it's helping to mitigate those shortfalls.
We found money for Cerrito Peak for an emergency fund, so there are funds available. If I were to make a decision, I mean, as much as it's nice to have Cerrito Peak, but we spent more money than what we're talking about here for that emergency versus safety equipment. But the council made a decision to use emergency funds for something that I wouldn't, well, you could argue it's an emergency if you really want to save the location, I guess. But
yeah, so short of going into emergency reserves, there wouldn't be money to, and at this point, we haven't recommended emergency reserves for anything, particularly in light of what, you know, our future is going to hold with the PERS impacts. But there is an emergency reserve fund. The conversation then would need to be, is it truly an emergency? Do you need this equipment
check.
Today?
Test.
You know, if I can add on to this, this year was kind of a freak year also for us, too. Our OAS engine, the engine we get from the state of California, has been broken down for 3 or 4 months, and we just got a new one. It's in our engine bay, and it'll be in service about 2 weeks. So we had to use one of our engines, and the state reimburses wear and tear on that engine, engine 5391. So usually we only make about the admin rate, about 20% comes back to us, and we've been using it either to help out with the general fund and also, or if we have equipment needs, to help us with our equipment needs. So we take less of a stress onto Measure Q. But this year, we got an additional $65,000 just based off the rental of engine 5391. It went to Northern California, then went to the Thomas Fire, and then it went to the mudslides of Montecito. That engine was out for 87 days. And so this year we have a little bit more money coming in because of the rental of the engine, because our OAS engine was broken down.
Any other questions?
I have a question. I should know this, but I'll ask anyhow. Does the fire department in your budget, do you pay into the annual budget, do you pay into an equipment replacement fund for your apparatus?
Not at this time, and we have been very fortunate the last 20 years with grants and givings and being very creative to replace our equipment. Our budget is 94% payroll, and the rest of it is that we use our grants. Just for a great example is that we're trying to replace our handheld radios. It's about if I'm not mistaken, $197,000. We just applied for a federal Fire Act grant, and we hope we get it. And that's, if we do get it, that's less $197,000 that we would have to take out of the general fund or Measure Q. Yeah. So, no, at this time, we do not pay into a replacement fund.
Has that always been the practice for the city of Morro Bay as far as replacing your apparatus? There's no funding set aside on an annual basis to replace that apparatus when it comes time to do so.
Correct. We do not have a fund, but we've been very fortunate on other avenues, and it's kind of forced us to look at different ways to save the city money. And probably of all the departments, we've probably been one of the most successful receiving grant funds and also trust givings to assist us with our large apparatus.
It's commendable that you're able to do that. I think it's quite short-sighted to, in the long term, for the city, not necessarily the fire department. I'm not trying to put anything on you, but that seems a very sketchy way to try to fund equipment purchases for the fire department for large apparatus. When we're talking about equipment, there's the fire engines, which are very expensive, and they have a long life cycle. And then you have the more short-term equipment that gets expended: defibrillators, fire hose, saws, that type of thing that gets used up in the course of a year's time or longer going to one of these fires. You don't necessarily use up your fire engine going to the fires, although there is a toll taken on the apparatus to send it out for that long of a period of time. There's maintenance costs. So you're getting reimbursed from the state for that rental, but it doesn't sound like that money is actually going back into any kind of long-term plan to replace that apparatus. Is that another question? Does the city not have any kind of? Is the city's practice not to budget for equipment replacement on an annual basis for all the departments, or is this just for fire?
So the I guess if I could just start by saying that in those employee meetings, your city manager made it very clear that equipment and facilities maintenance are both underfunded, and their needs of the city So we need to address that in the 18-19 budget and going forward. So we're trying to play the hand we were dealt this year and make some changes for next year. Typically, what I'm used to seeing, both of those kind of funds serve as like an internal service fund, and we'd have a schedule of equipment. We'd have how many, you know, years of useful life is left, and you divide that out, and it gets charged to the department. We're going to have to phase that in somehow. I don't have a sense of what the number is if we didn't phase it in, but it'll have to be some kind of smoothing effort. But that is on the plan for 18-19 and making those a priorities, because we can't keep ignoring either equipment or facilities. And Sandy, you may have some more background on this, but in the 17-18 budget, there's a note in the transmittal letter on both vehicle replacement and facilities fund. The vehicle replacement says that it was funded at $75,000 in 16-17. And then facilities is funded from rent through the D'Estasio's building. I did just look at facilities today, and I know there isn't any other funding source for that, so it was specifically from that rental, and that's now vacant. So as of last week, I think, so that rental income will be going away. $75,000 probably isn't getting us very far, and again, I don't have a full sense of what those are as we're starting to gather that information. The chief has a very comprehensive list of his equipment, and I'm sure the other departments do as well, but, you know, getting a grasp around all of that, I would guess that doesn't quite put a drop in the puddle. So I don't know if that answers your question, but you're right that his money normally would go into a equipment replacement fund for that piece of material. Or a piece of equipment, and this is really a mitigation measure to get us through the circumstance that we have right now, and hopefully give us an ability to come up with a plan moving into 18-19. And Scott, if you want to add to that.
Yeah, I'll just add to that. We have most cities in California are facing unprecedented increases in pension costs, and I was just met with the California League of Cities lobbyist who works very closely with CalPERS, and we're all hoping and praying that the courts can kind of bring some sense to all of this, because we need wholesale change, not only at the local level, which we're very willing to do and work hard for, but we need structural change at the state level to allow us to deal with existing retirees as well as existing employees. We're looking at a 20 to 30 year run of increases. I don't know how any city is going to deal with that, much less a city like us that hasn't traditionally invested in its capital replacement needs and its equipment and its employees, who lag well behind the region in terms of competitiveness, IT needs, et cetera. So we are a bit behind the eight ball, and that's why we had a very serious discussion with our employees last week about what this all means, because we have to invest in our equipment, we have to invest in our people, we have to invest in our facilities and the amenities that the people come to rely upon for their quality of life in the city. It's going to take a mammoth effort, and it's going to mean certain things going away. That's the only way we see it working. And so we're open to ideas, but we appreciate the perspective you bring, that yes, we wish that there had been funding of these. You should be putting money into those pots. But we were presented with really difficult choices, and like most cities, we're just kicking the can down the road. We can't do that any longer. Thank you.
No, the only comment I really had was when we were talking about FEMA, and after being under their tender care for December, they are very careful making sure that they get enough financial data to justify any money they give us. And there's a very detailed process they follow. And if you really want to find out what they included under that stuff when they calculate it, they'd be more than willing to share it with you. But then again, they also don't tell a city what to do with the money when they give them money.
Okay. Jennifer, you mentioned paying off the CalPERS side fund. Is it supposed to be paid off completely in June and you're just going to do it in March, or is that just this year's payment?
No. I will look it up, but I think there's actually 2 years left on that. So I think 18-19 and 19-20, if my recollection is correct.
So you just want to do the portion that actually falls during this fiscal year anyway?
The whole side fund is 300 and something. I'd like to pay it all off, because what that does is saves you 7.5% interest, or 7.375% interest. So they apportion these side funds. They charge you this interest over the course of the life of the side fund. They were 5 to 7 years. We've paid off the police side fund this year, so the only one remaining is fire. And we will achieve more savings over paying it off if we pay it off before the start of next fiscal year. That $7,000 delta is just an additional savings if we pay it off in March. And it all comes down to interest on what they charge us on having that side fund sitting with them.
Okay, so I'm sorry. So the side fund will be completely paid off this fiscal year for the fire? There won't be anything left to pay?
If council approves the recommendation.
Okay.
Right.
Good. Out of all the items on your recommendation, and I concur with other members of the committee that it seems like if it hadn't been for this somewhat of a windfall with the fire this year, the holes created by the two big items of business license and what was the other one?
TOT.
TOT. That would have made an even bigger hole in the general fund budget. So it was a little bit of a fortunate circumstance. But now you're looking at not filling the position of deputy city manager, and I wonder if you could just kind of describe to the committee what impact that has on your staffing, what kind of functions are being missed, you know, who's picking up the slack, is this something that can be carried on for the long term?
Yeah, I'll take that one. Connie left the city 2 weeks into my tenure as city manager, so I'm not accustomed to having his support. I did come from a city where there were five, you know, folks working in the city manager's office, the city manager, deputy assistant, and two analysts. You know, obviously a city much larger in scale and scope, but it's typical that you would have at least one other folk member on your staff. But you know, Jen is excellent. Our city clerk staff is excellent, so we've been able to make do with that based on their talents and what they can bring to the table. Long term, it's hard to say, but you know, I just based on the gravity of the situation we're facing on the financial side, I don't feel good about moving forward that direction yet. Probably spend the next year really assessing our real needs at the city manager level and across the organization before I'd be prepared to move forward with that. So I think there's a bit of sacrifice involved to get through until I have a better picture.
That's all the questions that I had. Are there any questions by the public? Yeah, this we're dealing with just the general fund right now. So if the questions that pertain to the general fund budget adjustments, that would be appropriate.
Good afternoon. I've never spoken to this group. I appreciate everything you do to, you know, kind of guide our city finances and help out. And we have Echo. Steve, thanks for your crew showing up on my block last night to help my neighbor out, by the way. I'm Joan Solun. I'm a resident here in Morro Bay. I also am a business owner. What I wanted to speak to you specifically about was your recommendation to reduce TOT by $200,000. I'm fine if the city does not think that we're going to make our city revenue goals. I own a hotel, so let me explain to you what the impact of those numbers are. The hoteliers put almost $1 million of revenue into a fund called a bid. That bid goes to create a city department that markets for our city to compress the city and cause tourism to happen in our city. Okay? They have a goal of meeting the revenue number for TOT every year. So when that revenue number is lowered, their goal is lowered. So let me say it again. We spend almost $1 million to get almost $4 million in revenue. So we're spending 25% to get 100%. What's really important, I don't know if you can hear me, but what's really important is that you know that it's not just $200,000. When you take $200,000 in revenue to the city down, you have to use a multiplier of 10 times to the hotels. So that's $2 million in revenue that you're lowering the goal of the tourism department. You're lowering their goal by $2 million in revenue when you take $200,000 out. What that means for our local city economy, we know from State of California data that every dollar that's spent in a hotel is turned over three times in our local economy. That means that you're pulling $6 million out of our local economy when you remove $200,000 of a goal. What that means, $2 million in hotel revenue, that means three head of household jobs plus four full-time equivalent employees at $20 an hour plus 10 part-time employees at between $12 and $15 an hour completely wiped out of our economy here by lowering the goal $200,000. I'm urging you to make your recommendation to remove $200,000 from your revenue, but continue to have the tourism department meet the original goal as budgeted. Thank you.
Jennifer, did you want to address that issue with the information you have here in your report?
Sure. Processing a little bit. I mean, I do appreciate where you're coming from, definitely, as a hotelier. From a general fund perspective, we have to have realistic numbers on what we're going to receive so we know how to balance and how to offset that. The TBID piece not being in here is frankly because it didn't get a chance to get it done yet and get it done well and comprehensively. So thinking through how that impacts those numbers, I don't have any adjustments for TBID in my draft yet. That's not on official paper anywhere, and it's likely to continue, especially since TBID has an accumulation fund that should the numbers not be reached for that fund, they would have some ability to draw into that. But from a general fund perspective, we have to have realistic numbers for us so we know how to balance and what we need to do to mitigate any offsets.
To be honest with you, I don't understand what the concern is. I understand the budget part because you're basically trying to forecast levels or rates of expenditures or revenues and to project what probably will happen. What nugget am I missing? Because we could go the other way. Why don't we add $200,000 to the revenue goal, in which case the $6 million negative will be another $6 million plus, I guess. So if you could help me understand,
right,
or have her re-explain it to where I can get it, but because, or am I the only one that doesn't?
I can explain. That? I mean, I'll try to speak for her, but she can correct me if I'm wrong. I mean, ultimately, the city has taken over the TBID. You know, we have the tourism division. We used to report to the deputy city manager, now to me. And they've been tasked with marketing for Morro Bay, particularly hoteliers and moteliers, with the goal of increasing TOT, right? So I think that's what Joan is saying, is like keep that as a goal that you continue to increase TOT because of its how important it is to the hoteliers and moteliers, but also everybody else, the residual impacts of having more tourists in town. That is the goal of the tourism department, as well as the TBID, to encourage that growth. We had stagnation this year. Some of that may be attributable to the Highway 1 closure. Highway 101 was also closed, and we're waiting to see if that had an effect on January numbers. And also, we get a sense that perhaps the economy is plateaued. Jen, who's in our tourism department, she went to a conference for kind of Visit California, the overall umbrella for tourism for the state, and they're kind of seeing this trend across the state. Now, that may be the case, but we still need to understand the metrics and how we are performing locally. So we need to look at the slow region and see how we're comparing to Pismo Beach, for instance, or Paso Robles, and kind of factoring out, you know, new hotel starts and just figure out how we're doing. And that we intend to bring something to council in the spring before the budget to have that good conversation. The other component to the TBID is that per resolution, the city is has agreed to ratchet up its contribution from the general fund into the TBID to help encourage events and other things that will ultimately bring more folks to town. So I hope that sort of answers the question. It's really, she doesn't want to see us ratchet down the goal, even though ultimately their budget has to reflect reality. I think she wants to keep that as an aspiration.
Okay. Thank you. So now, Jennifer, you are going to tell us about
that. Is the thought that you would keep the goal then?
That is conversation council is going to have, right? I mean, the resolution is just that. It's an aspiration, and it's something that council hasn't had a chance to reflect upon, as well as the other side of this is we have vacation rental owners and RV park owners who, in essence, are sort of mini motels, and they're not paying into this T-bid, so that's another component of this discussion that council will take up before the budget.
And now the enterprise funds.
Did you want to go through any of the questions that were specific to? Okay. For the enterprise funds, so that starts on page 21 of the attachment to the staff report. You'll notice that there's a couple highlighted sentences. I highlighted those and left them in there in this draft on purpose, because I wanted you to see the direction I was going to go. So the next budget will be adding kind of some beginning cash balances or beginning fund balances and ending fund balances, so you can see where the fund sits, and these aren't just kind of snapshots in time per se. But that will get removed for the council meeting. The harbor fund is doing well or fairly consistent. It's slightly below prior years. But they seem to be a little bit more fluid when you look at the trends. There's an $18,311 adjustment that's recommended for those, and that is all in the revenue category, mooring rentals, transient subleases, and other harbor services. They're all trending higher than expected. So that was good for the harbor fund. If we look at the water fund, there's a $75,200 budget reduction. I'm going to try to explain this one without confusing everybody. The harbor fund, water fund, and sewer fund have multiple different pieces to it. There's a revenue fund, an accumulation fund, a replacement capital fund, and then there's a utility discount fund. The utility one only impacts water and sewer. There's a transfer out from either the revenue or the accumulation fund to fund the utility discount program. In the case of the water fund and the adopted budget, Mr. Alexander pointed out correctly so that the transfer of $75,200 was accounted for in both the accumulation and the revenue fund, and you only need it in one. So we're recommending to remove one of those, so it'll be just one transfer of $75,200 from the water fund. The sewer fund, the $1.8 million budget reduction, that's directly from the conversation that we had in November about the sewer funds, and there was a double counting of capital projects in there, and that again was between the revenue and the accumulation fund. So that just kind of, this goes back and kind of cleans up and finalizes that conversation. There's a couple expenditure adjustments for the harbor operating fund as well. They totaled $15,500. When we looked at these, we looked at them in terms of net, that the adjustments to revenues were higher than those to expenditures, so overall we felt comfortable with that and recommending those going forward. I would point out that the business equipment rental is for a copier that's quite old. We're actually going to be transferring a copier that was originally obtained for the wharf project when we thought we were going to be further along on that. So we're going to reclassify that to the harbor department and give them a newer copier that's running better, and they won't have as much maintenance going on with that. There's specific detail on page 24 for those as well, those adjustments. Should I continue to the water reclamation project, or are there questions on the enterprise funds? Continue? Okay. The water reclamation facility, this was originally going to be presented to the Wharf CAC in February. That meeting was canceled due to a lack of quorum, so this is the first time this has been published. You'll have a 1718 on page 25, the 1718 adopted budget, the second quarter actuals in their percentage year to date. Because this is a capital project, we're showing it a bit differently. There's not the annual trends necessarily that are helpful with capital projects. On page 26 is a list of budgeted expenditures, expenditure reductions that we're recommending. They total $2 million. The original budget for 1718 was $4.2 million. We know, given the fact that we spent 13% as of December, that we're not going to spend all of that, especially given where we're at with the project. So we've gone through and tried to thoughtfully recommend adjustments in categories that made sense. We believe we've left enough in for the new project manager and any offsets that that will bring to either contractual services or however that person is brought aboard. So that makes the total budget, you know, closer to $2 million for the year. And I guess I would point out that this isn't cost savings necessarily. Should the project continue as it is conceived of right now, it would just defer these costs into future years. But we still want to have a reasonable level of appropriation limit so that we're true to what the intent of the council is and the committee at this point. For the other funds, there's two other funds that we address. Those are the that's the risk management fund and the opportunity fund. The risk management fund, it's recommended to fund the city's share of the Diablo closure legal fees from that, about $15,000. And then the economic study that was discussed at the last council meeting. The council discussion was that they were interested in possibly funding the study. They wanted more information on if other cities and other business entities were going to join in on that. So this is a recommended funding source should they choose to do it. Again, the general fund really can't support it at this time, so it would have had to come from emergency reserves, or the prior administration had set up an opportunity fund, Fund 480. There's $48,000 and some change in that fund right now that's not appropriated. So we identified that as a possible funding source if the council wishes to continue with the economic study. And I think that covers all of the recommendations, so if there's any questions.
Let's start on this side this time. Any clarifying questions? Don?
No, but thank you so much.
I just said no, but thank you so much for all of the detail and the work that went into this. I know this is a tremendous amount of work for relatively new staff, so thank you.
I had a couple comments or questions. I assume that there is a adjusted schedule which supports the changes in funding for the WRF CAC or WRF. Have these expenditures been delayed, or has this been carefully put through the project management program they have?
Let me try to answer that, and if I'm not understanding what you're asking, please correct me. So we sat down with the Public Works Director Rob and went through realistically where we were at December 31st with the project and where we could get to in the next 6 months given the direction from the council. So we know we have the RFP out and that's coming in. We know that we're going to be hiring a new project manager. But the entire $4.2 million that was budgeted. We know I don't think it's possible to spend that much, given how 6 months left in the year. So we tried to be very thoughtful in where we were making these recommendations to be realistic for the scope of the project for the rest of the year. Does that answer your question?
I guess what I was saying was, generally, when you have an estimate of resources in a project, it's based on what's the cost, who's going to be doing what, when's the contract going to be awarded, and it's all very tightly controlled within a computer program. So from what it sounds like is there has not been, these are estimates, these are not based on the actual updating of the schedule for the project. Is that right?
That's correct.
And the other question I had to do with the legal fees for the Diablo plant closure. What is the opportunity cost for spending this $15,000? How much does the city expect to see to reimburse that?
You want to answer?
Not necessarily any opportunity cost. It's our obligation. The city joined a coalition of cities, and the city of SLO was identified as a lead agency to be the representative of our interests during the hearings and in the run-up to the hearings, and we had a very disappointing outcome, and we're pursuing other routes to find funding to mitigate the impacts of the $1 billion annual loss to the region. But the $15,000 really is, it was a promise made to the city of SLO that we would reimburse them. The hope was that reimbursement would come through the community impact fund that would come through the approval of the of that settlement agreement at the CPUC. So I don't know if that answers your question, but ultimately it's an obligation that we have.
How much was the mitigation costs were accepted by the Public Utility Commission?
How much was accepted?
Yeah, as is being appropriate to pay to the local agent.
Well, they approved it in zero. We were seeking a $10 million economic impact fund, of which some of that would be appropriated back to the city of SLO. I think the total, trying to think of the cost in my head, it was north of $150,000 or $200,000 of accumulated legal costs to get to the point where we did. And there's no expectation of future legal costs unless the cities, the county, and others felt it was appropriate to go after PG&E shareholders. But that's not the play this time.
Thank you.
Yeah.
I had a question about copiers. What is the city doing as far as copiers? It looks like, from what I read, the city either owns them or leases them. And has the city staff ever considered looking into participating in a cost per copy contract with if another agency has something available that could be piggybacked, rather than owning or leasing copiers direct?
So we kind of have a mixture at the moment. We have several that are still under contract, and we have a few that have expired that we don't really own, and we're just kind of paying the maintenance on them as they break down. I had done an RFP for copier services several years ago, so we were going to kind of unbury that and kind of use that as a template and add our information to it. That Steve is our IT guy, so he and I were going to work on doing that. We'd be open to any kind of, we need to do something because even the ones that we have on lease are approaching expiration, so we do need to do something, and we could certainly look at doing an alternative besides a lease.
Well, I'd suggest looking and seeing if there are any other larger agencies that have copier contracts, like a cost per copy contract, where you're basically paying on a cost per copy, and the contractor owns the equipment. They provide the toner. I don't know if they provide paper, but that may be some contracts that include that. And there may be some larger agencies, SLO City, SLO County, the state, that might have a cost per copy type contract that is open for other agencies to participate in, and you know, that way you're not owning the equipment, you're not paying for maintenance, and you're getting your equipment refreshed every so often too, so you're not stuck with old unreliable equipment. So it might be something to look into. I would suspect there are contracts like that out there available where another agency has gone through the bid process, mm-hmm. and it would probably satisfy the requirement for competition.
Okay.
And so just a suggestion.
Yeah, thank you.
Now, just two general comments. One, I applaud Scott and staff to absorb the deputy city manager. Obviously, it would make life a lot easier on you, and more items could get addressed. And also, to the overall presentation, I totally mimic what Don said. It's very impressive with what you put together here. Thank you.
A couple things on the legal fees. I'm sorry. Sure.
I wanted to thank the chief as well for coming and spending your time to share that information. I know that's time out of your day for us, so thank you.
On the legal fees, you mentioned that that's an obligation. That's money that's already been spent. We just have to pay it. It probably should have been budgeted, but was omitted. Okay. But the $40,000, my understanding there is that if the effort is successful, then the city share will be somewhere in the vicinity of $450,000. Is that the rough number we're looking at?
I think what the number is what the expectation of that $10 million economic fund, that we would see about $450,000 of that. Now that fund, is, in essence, doesn't exist for the foreseeable future. The $40,000 is the maximum of which we would contribute to a city, county, private, nonprofit, school pooling of funds to create an economic strategy for the region to prepare for the 2024 closure of the first reactor and the 2025 closure of the second reactor, 1,500 jobs gone like that, and another probably 1,000 support roles or more gone. Like that, so that is kind of our the high end would be $40,000. It's probably going to be more towards the low end, around $25,000-$26,000, for us to put our share on the table. And council has already nodded that they support that. They want to see where that would come from, and that was identified by Jen in this opportunity fund. Obviously, you'd rather invest in things that are happy, that are go beyond what you already have. This is really just to secure some kind of salvage, in essence, the loss of a third of our or a quarter of our economy, really, when you factor in all the residual effects of the Diablo nuclear power plant.
So the $40,000 just pays for the city's share of the study
and strategy development. We're working with the Coalition of Cities, and the county are working with Senator Monning and our state representative to put legislation before the whole body this year, hopefully, that would seek to address some of the legal considerations put forward by the CEPC. In essence, they said there wasn't a nexus, so they don't have the legal authority to award that agreement. Legislative fix may address that. Now, how willing would the Bay Area and Southern California legislators be interested in supporting what in essence is a rural community's plea, when they have to also factor in Santa Rosa, Napa, and the other cities that were devastated by the fires that could be attributable to PG&E as well. So these are the kind of things we're working against. But in order to at least have a plan in place so that if that does come forward, or if we can seek federal funding or other state funding, we need that strategy in place to at least know what our blueprint is.
Okay, so yeah. It's kind of a 10% gamble.
Yeah. I mean,
you're spending a dime to get a dollar, maybe?
Hopefully, the other, you know, we wouldn't come out that way, but right now it's kind of how it's looking. But we need we need something in place to start chipping away at it.
Okay. On the Harbor Fund, I'm sorry, John, was there something on that item?
On that economic fund, I remember about a year ago there was some talk about a project to reuse the electric transmission improvements, or whatever you call it, infrastructure by doing some offshore wind farms. Is that died?
No, it's not died. In fact, we're going out to a trip to D.C. in March to look at wharf funding and also the harbor. But we're also going to be looking at talking with the Department of Defense, if possible, and other regulatory bodies around, you know, what's the feasibility of this. Locally, there's concern about impacts to the commercial fishing industry because there would be loss of, in essence, habitat for fishing. But the overall impact to the community would be tremendous. We would see direct revenues from such a venture, as well as high-paying jobs that could, I don't know if it would offset the loss of the local power plant, but it would certainly be a boon for the community. So right now we're just kind of working with the interested vendor who's also working with our local fishing industry, and also trying to overcome some concerns from the Navy Department.
If I remember rightly, the anchoring structures for those wind turbines would create hard surfaces for fish food. And has that been discussed with anybody?
It's actually currently being discussed with the sanctuary and the fishing industry. It's kind of ever evolving. I guess the point is that it's very active and we're hopeful. Yeah.
Just a couple more things on the Harbor Fund. It looks like there's actually more revenue changes than there are expenditure changes, so that's good. But I would wonder about a department head that has a $20,000 electricity budget and then needs $9,000 more. That's kind of the thing you really shouldn't miss. I mean, electricity is pretty predictable, so they might need some budget coaching if.
I can comment on that. They had a utility bill or a utility location that had never been billed to them. They've been getting free electricity for years and years and years, and it came to light this year. So now we're starting to pay the bill, and that's why it was never part of the base budget information.
Thank you. That's a really good reason. And then on the utility discount program, my understanding is that money comes from penalties, late fees in essence, for customers, water, sewer. So it makes sense to me that would come from the revenue fund and not from the accumulation fund, right?
Well,
Those revenues for penalties are going into the revenue fund. So if the money's going into the revenue fund, then the transfer should come out of the revenue fund to go to the program fund.
Right. I guess from a financial perspective, everything left in the revenue fund flows to the accumulation fund, so you're taking from, right, like, so at year end, you zero out your revenue fund, and that all goes into your water or sewer accumulation fund, and that's what you're have money for capital projects, for what we have money for the wharf, what we do have. So you're right, it would seemingly make sense to just take it directly from the water fund, but or water revenue fund, but if it comes from the accumulation pot, it's one hand or the other, really.
Okay, just an opinion.
Yep.
Okay, so are there any, there's the fire chief out there and nobody else. Any public comment? I guess not.
If I can go back, I missed it. I guess the $40,000, someone pointed out to me that we've spent a lot of money on economic development studies for Morro Bay. Apparently there's five or six studies that are sitting in Scott's office that he can go through when at some point when he doesn't want to sleep. What is an example of what might come from this? Because the reason this came up was we've done economic studies, but we haven't done anything. So we basically just have economic. We got five studies that we haven't acted on, so we spent however much money, and many of the recommendations are probably the same recommendations. So in this case, this is the county study that I guess we're participating in, and we're hoping to get a dollar back on a dime. But for city studies, it generally meant we had to spend the money. It came up with suggestions that would require more money, not that that $25,000 expenditure would all of a sudden produce $250,000 or $2 million worth of revenue. So what's an example that wouldn't basically imply, well, here's our study, here's our recommendation, but you would have to cough up some amount of money?
I don't have a great example. I would say that there are several plans that have been approved recently. The economic development plan, I'm sure it's called something else, just generically. And then there's the downtown and waterfront strategic plan that was recently adopted. And we have every amount of effort that we have at our disposal and every intention to implement key strategies within those. They may include wayfinding or some kind of infrastructure improvements where we can afford them. That includes strengthening our partnership with the chamber. They have a very, very energetic, intelligent, driven CEO who wants to strengthen partnership with the city and really help turn things around so that it's not just how's the city failing you, but what are you doing that you can improve yourself as a business? And again, what can the city do to help you, given our limited funds? But there may be regulatory changes, other kind of things. So we are actively pursuing implementation of the generic economic development plan. And then the waterfront downtown plan will be informed by the local coastal plan and general plan updates that are coming through, as well as zoning. So that could lead to design standards and different changes that will help improve our overall economic forecast for the future. Of course, those take several years to be in place, and hopefully you see investment from the private sector as well as from us. The economic strategy that would be set forth by kind of the Diablo closure would be both more macro but also micro. They're looking to come in and do kind of a broad sweep of the whole region, but then also to get down to the zip code level and really understand what the impacts are going to be from the closure. How many employees are you going to lose from this? What does that mean to your retail? And ultimately, what are we going to do to generate new industry or strengthen the existing ones that remain? What are we going to do for workforce development? These aren't the things that our local economic development plans really consider, although there are discussions about that. I think this strategy is more focused on kind of the long term. You know, how are we developing our children into, you know, so that they can stay here? What are we doing for STEM and other, you know, research with Cal Poly and Cuesta? So I think it's looking at things a little differently. As far as funding, though, there's no guarantees that there'll be funding, and that's the challenge. And I understand that was the same consideration that council had. You know, are we just investing in another plan that we can't implement? And it's a fair question, but I would say, based on the energy and the discussions we've had with the Economic Vitality Corporation and bankers and Cal Poly and others, there's a strong willingness to do whatever we can to put money into that and try to draw upon sources that aren't the city.
So the recommendation here is just to receive the report and provide input. So you've got our input. I guess there's not really an action item to make a recommendation to the council, but is do the committee members have any opinions on the recommendations here from staff? Every item that's recommended to be changed in the budget, is that... Does that meet with your concurrence? Are there any items that you don't feel should be in there?
I'd concur with the staff recommendations.
Any other input? Okay. So I guess we're good with it. Run with it. It's too bad the general fund is eking by this year, and it's going to be a difficult budget season for sure. So good luck with that. Okay, the next item is item B3, to review the fiscal year 17-18 second quarter transactions from the collection of the general purpose local sales tax, commonly known as Measure Q. Jennifer?
Thank you. So the Measure Q information is here in a similar format that was presented last time. Again, I'll condense this and incorporate it into the mid-year report for council, so it's one comprehensive document. Revenues are trending well, slightly above last year at this time, but fairly consistent when you look at kind of an average across the last 5 years. Expenditures are trending low. Some of that is due to the SRO position, and we had a conversation about that last time. I have a bit more clarity a bit on that. So PG&E actually funded the SRO position, or at least the school's share of that position, from what I've been told. So that I did mention that somewhere, and that wasn't a typo. That was actually intended to be PG&E. I'm not exactly sure the genesis of that, but they were the ones that contributed the half share for the school, the school's share of that. It was determined in around June, July timeframe that we wouldn't be obtaining that funding from PG&E or an offsetting funding from the school. But at that point, the budget was already approved. So we haven't engaged in SRO services. We haven't provided those services this fiscal year at all. So that's why there's no expenditures hitting that line item. That's just over $77,000. And that is the piece of funds that we're asking to reappropriate for the fire department. So it just happened to that we had that savings and there was some money available to reappropriate to buy the fire equipment that the chief was requesting, so it worked out from that sense, and that's why we had the idea to do that. Did you have a question?
I have a question. Is that okay? Yeah. Is there a way to find out, so that money didn't go to the salary of the police officer, is there a way to find out, though, if there were expenditures to support the two schools, even though that money wasn't going to the officer? So, for instance, overtime for other officers or more time, you know, from other officers, basically, to go attend to the high school or to the elementary school without that position?
I'm sure we could pull records of calls. Maybe there was calls out to the school that we'd be able to pull from the record system and bring that information back. The SRO was kind of an 18th position for the department, so the conversation at the time was if you have 18 positions, you're budgeted for 17, since you're not getting that half of the funding, so an employee did leave the city and that SRO slipped into that 17th position. But you're right, there may have been calls out to the school or other support provided, so we could look into that.
I would just be interested to know the true cost savings on that. I mean, if we can assume it's a $77,000 savings, or if some of that was eaten up, and if so, what percentage was eaten up by other calls?
Sure. And it would be as it is right now, it would be a cost savings to Measure Q, because any of those calls would have been picked up in the general fund as part of their daily, you know, call log. But I can see why that would be important for you to know.
So cost savings to General Q, but then possibly a burden on a general fund that's already burdened. It's sounding like from this meeting that the general fund is lean. I'm looking at some troubled times in this budget season, I think, as John called it.
Yeah.
So I'm just interested to know, as we're really taking a close look, the SRO has come up numerous times across numerous meetings. If we could just get sort of real cost on what this looks like to
sure.
make some informed decisions if it comes up again.
Sure. So the total budget, I called it a reappropriation, is $66,000 for the requested fire department materials, and that detail is found on page 45 of the packet. It's from anything from safety equipment, small tools. There's a small allotment for meals and lodging that I understand was traveled down to the landslide. And again, that totals $66,000. So with the $77,000, there's still about an $11,000 balance left that would remain unappropriated because it can't be used for SRO services. So that can, at the discretion, you could make a recommendation tonight on that. You could wait to third quarter and allocate, you know, unfunded, or you could wait till budget time and use it next year, carry it forward for items in the future. The other part of the expenditures that are trending low is there hasn't been significant work done on the pavement project at this point. I think just the expenditures that hit as of December, you know, there's always about a 30-day lag. So some of those wouldn't have gotten caught for the 12/31 cutoff. And we do try to be consistent that even if an expenditure actually or a work hit during December, if we didn't pay the bill until January, we try to be consistent across all the years for comparison purposes. So we just cut off at 12/31. Rather than trying to funnel through a bunch of detail and put things back. So there should be more expenditures when you see the third quarter update in April. For the summer, yeah.
Does that conclude your presentation?
That does. I kind of just stopped, didn't I? That does conclude my presentation.
Okay.
Thank you.
Bart, any questions?
I'm still not fully comprehending the way we're doing this. It still seems to me like it's kind of a shell game that we're using Measure Q funds rather than money that I think does exist in the general fund. But I certainly support the need for a fire department that's well equipped. Not going to stand in the way.
What sort of future disbursements are you planning on the Measure Q funds?
So the recommendation to use that SRO, if you will, money towards fire, that really is a one-time. And as I mentioned before, kind of get us through and play the hand we've been dealt. We're not proposing that in any way suggest a funding basis for next year. When we have our meeting in March, we'll be having a conversation about the direction you would like to see the allocations of money go towards. So, you know, pavement, fire, if there's police, how that aligns with the resolution and the goals of the council and what you would like a recommendation. Not necessarily detail, but if there's some percentages or a kind of a conversation about that. So that's at our next council meeting in March.
I was wondering what sort of liabilities are still outstanding for the Measure Q funds?
For the rest of the year, you mean? So the majority of the payment work does happen in the spring, summer. So I would expect to see the majority of that 529 spent at year end. We'll have some updated numbers for you in April, but again, the majority happens, you know, in the better weather. We have historically used all of the overtime and fire, so I would expect to see the full $116,000 in overtime for fire. Same with the debt service; those are set. So that would be fully expended. Really, the only savings at this point that we would project is that $77,000 from the SRO position. There isn't anything captured right now for standby pay for police. The reason for that is there's been some confusion on how staff should, and this is not just in the police department, citywide, between labor costs applied and what's associated in their timesheet. So we're working on getting that through. We'd like for them to directly charge to Measure Q so you see the detail rather than seeing a transfer in and out. So that's what we're working on with them. But they do have, they've incurred $12,000 in standby pay in the general fund at this point. So the police department has to, if I even think half of that, you're at six, and I would guess you'd get through the next six at year end, and that's what we're projecting.
One other thought popped up. Right now, Rob is doing a experiment on Panorama Avenue where they used an alternative pavement section for replacement up there. If that works well enough, it might lead to some future savings in the pavement management plan. So I was just wondering if at what point you want... I don't think Rob wants to talk about it for another few months, but you might want to start asking him, do you see any future savings in the pavement management plan based on experiences and the recent experiences?
Okay, thank you for that. And when we do have our conversation in March, we do plan to offer both Chiefs and Rob to come and have a conversation about their needs or how things are working for them. So that'll be an opportunity for you as a committee to ask questions as well when you're considering how you would like to recommend Measure Q money be appropriated. The other piece of the staff report has to do with the pavement management plan, and we've recommended setting up a capital project for pavement management. And the reason that we're recommending that is some of the money is SB1 money, which has some specific accounting requirements for us to report back to the state. And rather than piecemealing those, we thought it might be a benefit to be able to show all of the pavement work in one capital project. But that would require us transferring money out of Measure Q into that project to support that. We'd still be able to provide you the detail. It would just be the detail of that project. So that is the recommendation number two in the staff report. So if there's any questions on that.
Don, did you have any questions? Okay.
I have a few questions. On the SRO, I'm really glad to hear how this has worked out and that person did not have to get laid off. But this is really news to me. I mean, we talked about this as of the January meeting, and it hasn't been even used all fiscal year long. This comes as a surprise to me. So there's that. And then on the... fire overtime accounting. I did ask this question, and you provided a written answer, but I still didn't really understand how it works. I mean, what we have in the detail report is six payrolls of 100% allocation to Measure Q for one relief firefighter, and there were 13 payrolls in the first half of the year. So how is this supposed to work?
I love to answer that for you, sir. Through the emergency services ad hoc committee, the city council wanted us to staff four people on duty a day. Instead of hiring three or four full-time firefighters, we are using one floater, a bunch of part-timers, and overtime. That's not the most cost-efficient way we can do it. Ideally, if it was operationally, we would just hire three or four firefighters to guarantee we would have four firefighters on duty. So Measure Q pays for the floater, pays for his overtime, and then it pays for the additional part-timers that we use. So on any given month, I apologize. On any given month, we
have 24 days. So for the first 3 months of the fiscal year, none of that particular relief firefighters' costs were allocated to Measure Q. It only started in October. I just don't understand why that happened.
It's that labor cost.
I believe it had to do in our payroll system that the person that was charged, assigned to Measure Q, because we can code it to a general ledger account number that's specific this, that person left the position, and when the new person was hired, it wasn't submitted through the payroll, the HR system, that that's where we were supposed to charge that person. And we will not arbitrarily just charge a person to a specific cost center number without something coming through us from HR. It's now been corrected, but that is why, and I think when Susan brought it to you, she had us correct it through a journal entry, but that's why the oversight happened. It's because the person that was in the position that was being charged directly to Measure Q left the position, and the new person hired did not get coded there. I believe I'm stating that correctly, Steve, but you may have more information about that.
Yeah, I'd like to correct that just a little bit, that we had a promotion, and we, by our floater, by the MOU contract, along with the be a fire engineer. But in addition, we can't code the overtime that's used by the 8 or 9 other individuals. And then we can't also code the part-time that can be utilized by 15 different part-timers. So with that said, that we are transferring funds throughout the year into the general fund to help cover for the overtime that is not tied to one person and the part-time that's not tied to one person.
Okay, so somebody on staff has to review the overtime expenses and then do a manual calculation and a journal entry to get those into Measure Q. Okay. On the list of equipment for the fire department, there's one item here, 2 out of 3 thermal, and then it says imaginers. Is that supposed to be imagers?
Correct.
And I'm just curious, why is it 2 out of 3? So are you buying 1 from the general fund and 2 from Measure Q, and why would you do that?
So we're trying to be creative with our funds and try to get the biggest bang with the buck. The Friends of the Morro Bay Fire Department right now is looking at doing a match purchase with us, and they'll purchase 1 and we'll purchase 2. It's important to me that we have the same thermal imager on all 3 apparatus. For training reasons. So at 2 o'clock in the morning, they're using the same thermal imager in engine 5391 and also in truck 5341. So it's a partnership with the Friends of the Morro Bay Fire Department, and they'll purchase 1 and Measure Q will purchase 2.
Oh, okay. So the third one is not coming from the general fund.
Correct.
Okay. So on this list, the only thing I'm going to have heartburn over is the meals and lodging. And, I mean, it's $522. It's not a lot of money, but I just don't want to have Barbara stand up there at the end of the year and report on what Measure Q was spent on and have her show this as an expense item. I would much rather just see this be a general fund expense and not have to report on this at the end of the year.
So, again, this year was pretty unique, and we can look at that most definitely, but our firefighters were put in a place that we didn't have a budget line for, where I chose to allow them to go into hotel rooms every other night to decon the biohazard mud that they had to sit in for 20 hours. And Santa Barbara County did provide us good accommodations, but the shower locations, I want my guys to be able to get some rest between the days of work and get the mud off them. So I made a decision, and that's what that – I do have a budget line for hotels and meals, but as you could probably figure out, that I've over-exceeded that budget line because of the unique situation that we incurred in Montecito.
Okay, thank you. Any other questions from the committee members? Okay, well, this is going to – there are 3 recommendations here, so let's just do them one at a time here. The recommendation to review the transactions and suggest any amendments. As I stated, I'm going to recommend that we recommend that meals and lodging not be funded from Measure Q. That's the only thing that I would recommend, that everything else be funded and the budget be amended as recommended by the staff.
Is the, again, it's not quite 522, but the labor cost from Public Works, is that a standard? There's no budget line item for that. Is that a Is that what we've done in the past, or is that a first time? Like $70,000, I think.
I know that the labor costs specific were related specifically to the pavement management work as why they were charged there. Let me see if I have.
I assume that was the logic, but has that been a normal thing that we've done, or is this another way to kind of help balance?
I don't have the detail here, but Sandy's saying she doesn't recall seeing it last year, so it might be one time.
I don't believe that the labor costs and benefits are ever carved out as a specific line item out of the total amount allocated to the pavement management plan.
I think this has been discussed prior to my coming on this committee, and I would put it in the same category that I don't think that ought to be measure cube.
I believe this would be labor that Mr. Leivick charges, you know, he's working on the pavement plan, the people, you know, his engineers, it's whatever, it's this, whatever their time is being used, and they're assigning it to that effort, because it doesn't just happen. I mean, they have to have people getting prepared to execute that pavement management strategy.
Do I understand, though, this is a change in doing that? Or is this another one of those, whoops, we missed it in the past, and now we're going to charge for that?
I don't think it's an oops. I think that when the pavement management plan is made up of payments out to external paving contractors and then probably small amounts of labor that gets charged to that project initiative. As far as carving, and when they build their budget, I mean, in the future, if you would like them to be able to estimate and say, okay, we're going to carve out of the $529,000, $10,000 or $15,000 that we know will be our manpower that we have to do to execute this strategy, that would probably be appropriate. But I don't think in the past they've ever broken it out, is all I'm saying.
But they've always charged.
They've always charged a little something there. We could go back and look historically. There's always been a little something charged there.
I heard you make a recommendation that the lodging and food not come out of Measure Q, but I'm just wondering about the implications of that. So if it doesn't come out of Measure Q, then what? And just as I know I'm here to be on Measure Q and manage the Measure Q funds, as a personal bias, I don't see an issue with food and hotel for firemen who are on an emergency situation. So I just want to know kind of the implications.
So anything, including the meals and lodging, that doesn't come out of Measure Q would go to the general fund. It would be absorbed in there, or we'd make a recommendation to add it if we, you know, $522,000 isn't going to swing the general fund. That $522, not $5,000, is not going to swing the general fund, you know, that significantly. But that would be the other funding source for it.
Can I ask why? Can we have a little discussion around that?
As I mentioned, at the end of the year, all of these costs get reported to the council, and they are listed in detail, and we go through them, and we approve Barbara's presentation. She gets up and gives a presentation. And I just think this is the kind of thing that you don't want to be telling the people you're spending Measure Q money on.
I don't personally have an issue telling the people that Measure Q money went to support our firefighters. So I guess I'm not, you know, not to be cause controversy, but I'm not totally clear on what's the downside of using Measure Q money to support our firefighters in an emergency situation, if the money is supposed to go to safety and fire and those kinds of things.
It's agreed that this supports the fire. It was a very good decision by the fire chief to do it, to provide this to his firefighters. They needed it. It's a legitimate expense. The problem is that the public has a high sensitivity to things like meals and lodging. And when you tell the public, we're levying a special tax on you so that we can buy meals and lodging, the public does not like that. It's a sensitivity issue.
Yes.
If I remember rightly, the purpose of Measure Q was essentially infrastructure improvements, not so much day-to-day operations. So it gets in that funny thing there. So it's just was maintaining that the staffing and getting the fire department building built or the station built and helping with the equipment. And that's the sort of things it was meant for. And if there's an emergency, I know FEMA is very definitely would have funded that. So maybe he can pretend that $70,000 extra on FEMA could have been applied towards that 522 a little bit.
Yeah, if I could just weigh in. Again, it's $500, so the general fund, we can put that in the general fund if that's an easier swallow for everybody, or if it was more substantial, it might be more of a concern, but $500, it's fine to just leave that in the general fund.
That'd be my preference. Let's go ahead and take these recommendations one at a time. So is there a motion on this the budget amendments in the Measure Q fund? I'll make the motion then.
You make the motion.
Okay, I'll move that we approve all the recommended changes to the Measure Q fund, but delete the $522 for meals and lodging for the fire department.
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed?
Aye.
Okay, so then the second recommendation is to approve staff recommendation to transfer Measure Q funding into a capital pavement management plan project pending City Council approval. Motion on that?
I move that we transfer excess funds into the pavement management plan.
Second.
Okay. All those in favor?
Aye.
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 Okay. And then the third item is to approve staff's recommendation to fund equipment needs of the fire department. Oh, I'm sorry. So that was already part of it.
I think you've covered that one.
Yeah, sorry. So that was part of the overall budget amendment that we voted to approve. Okay. So that completes that item. And, Don, I understand you have to leave fairly soon? Okay. All right. So item B4, receive oral report of 10-year financial forecast update. Jennifer?
Thank you. So this is oral, and it's mostly oral because it's changing literally daily. We focused heavily on the revenues for the mid-year report, and we've updated the forecast with those accordingly. So we're forecasting pretty stagnant sales tax based on our most recent conversation with HDL, pretty stagnant TOT. I included a 3% increase, but not significant, and business license about 340, so it'll trend with actual receipts. What we haven't finished doing yet, and because it is changing daily, is the salary and benefits updates and how that'll affect 18-19 and how that'll move forward into the next 10 years. We know that from fiscal year 18-19 to 24-25, we're going to see an estimated $1.5 million increase in our PERS payments. And that's across the board, all funds, and that's due to the lowering of the discount rate.
What's the amount just for the general fund? Do you have that?
I don't have this broken down by funds yet.
Okay.
We did some analysis of our most current actual reports, and we projected those out with the normal costs and the employer contribution and UAL costs to get kind of a total impact with all nine of our groups. We have Tier 1, Tier 2, and a PEPRA for fire, safety, and miscellaneous. And that's from cumulative total of $1.5 million. So it's a 60-some percent increase. And that's what we've been focusing on. And then last week we heard the news that PERS made another change where they've prospectively, thankfully, have adjusted the amortization period. So for any new employees going forward, it's the cost will be amortized over a 20-year period rather than a 30-year period. If you think of financing a house in your mortgage, a 30-year mortgage, you pay less over a longer period of time. You know, a 15-year mortgage, you're paying more over a shorter period of time. So we know it's going to increase our costs with the idea of saving money in the long term, but being confronted with a $1.5 million increase, not even considering that, it's a big impact to the city. What we are looking at, and this is a pretty rough estimate at this point, looking at about $800,000 just in the general fund. And that is not touching reserves at this point. So I know in the prior forecasts, there's been budgeted use of emergency reserves. We're not including that at this point. When we get to a proposed budget, there will most likely be some. But we're trying to capture any cost savings we can. We have pretty stagnant operating projections at this point. There's some natural increases for utilities that are kind of outside of our control. There's increases to healthcare costs that are outside of our control. Some of our contractual services may have built-in increases that we have to abide by. But anything that we can control is stagnant and likely will have to be reduced. Like as I mentioned earlier, we solicited input from all of our employees. We're hoping to engage and collaborate with them, and if they have any ideas, and we've gotten some really great feedback and some really good ideas to kind of build off of. We need to break those down between kind of short-term achievable goals that can help for 18-19, and then some longer-term ones that will carry us into the future years. And that's the direction that we're working on right now. We have some kind of low-hanging fruit items in addition to recommending paying off the side fund to save a little bit of interest. In July, we'll make one lump sum payment for our annual PERS amount, and that's about a $50,000 savings. And that is all interest that they charge. It's about 3% interest that they charge you throughout the year. It's in our budget. You can choose to pay it monthly, or you pay it in July and save that amount. So we might as well pay it up front. We have the cash to do that, and essentially pay ourselves back and save that $50,000. So any of those kind of low-hanging fruit items we're identifying and trying to incorporate those into the 10-year forecast for future discussion. Scott, do you want to add anything? Do you have any specific questions or comments on the 10-year or on 18-19 budget, which is more pressing?
Well, wasn't there a long-term financial forecast provided by an outside firm last year or the year before? And are you using that in your 10-year forecast?
Yes. So Management Partners completed the 10-year forecast, been going through the model, and that's where we're updating the revenues in there so that it'll carry forward, you know, automatically in the future years. They also had built-in assumptions, so various revenues had different assumptions for growth. For example, TOT was built in at 5%, so we've gone through and adjusted some of those based on our current economic situation. I kind of grew up under the finance director that was very conservative, so that I tend to be very conservative, and also trained me that you don't want to budget or forecast things that aren't known. So a 5% increase in a revenue source that's pretty stagnant is very uncomfortable for me. Even a 3% increase at this point, since it does somewhat feel like the economy is plateauing, I would rather we budget conservatively but fairly and then adjust upward at the first quarter or second quarter if we need to. I would hate to be in a situation that we're in with this report today where we're trying to make up $400,000. It's a significant amount of change to make up with 6 months in the year, and even now less, you know, because we're in February. So I have gone through and are adjusting those estimates and those assumptions to a level that I'm more comfortable with. We'll be discussing those internally and then have a broader discussion with the council and the committee about what those adjustments have been.
Any questions from the other members? Okay, so the 10-year forecast is going to be part of your 18-19 budget document, or is it going to be a separate document?
There's a study session on Tuesday at the council meeting for the forecast. We're actively updating and getting a presentation ready for that. Our city manager just went to a PERS meeting on Friday. I have our meeting with our actuary, and that being the biggest impact, we want to get all that information together to kind of finalize that presentation for the 27th. So I believe that starts at 5 on the 27th. 4. Good thing I asked. 4 o'clock. And we'll have a PowerPoint and kind of go through some of the detail of that with the council at that point. From a inclusion in the budget, I'm typically used to including like a summary that shows out 5 or 10 years. You know, truthfully, once you get past 5 years, it's so much of a guess at that point. 5 years to me is more valuable.
Okay, well, if we don't have any other questions or comments, I guess we'll move to the next item, which is to receive the first quarter investment report. Jennifer?
Thank you. Mr. Chairman, you had requested, I think, that this come back on. This is the first quarter report that has already gone to council and was approved. The second quarter report should have come today. We are behind, so that'll come in March. Along with that, we want to bring back a discussion on liquidity rates. So since I've joined the city, I've been a little hesitant to do much with the investments without some guidance on that. I did send out a request via our listserv for CSMFO on liquidity. We're very liquid right now. I think it was 78% as of the first quarter. My other hesitation was, as I wanted to look into paying off the side fund, wanted to make sure, you know, there was some money there to do that. So we do have enough money. We have some rate estimates or quotes that were provided from one of our brokers. Short term, 6 months to 2 years are the best options for CDs right now. They do beat LAIF. There's the biggest, most significant difference in basis points, so that would be the recommendation, especially since, given the projections for PERS, we're not sure what our liquidity needs will be in the future years. So I think the purpose of this item was to get feedback on maybe the format, if you have thoughts or suggestions you'd like to incorporate with the second quarter report. I'm happy to hear those and carry those forward.
Any comments from the committee? No. Personally, I like the format. It's concise. I think your investment policy is pretty lengthy, but that's another thing. And the question I asked you in one of my written questions was about how much time you spend on this. The reason I asked that is because one of the things that this committee was supposed to do was to come up with recommendations as to how we could address the staffing shortage in the finance department. And so I'm thinking, well, if you're spending a lot of time on doing treasury management, maybe you could simplify that and just go more LAIF and CDs and not look for other types of investments, or it'd be easier to report, easier to purchase and such. So
my plan would be to go with CDs, mostly because that is, you know, easy, and we do have a pretty passive investment policy, so it aligns with that well. I would say normally I wouldn't spend a lot of time, especially given that we have such a passive policy. It does feel like I've been inundated with calls from brokers since I started, so that feels like it's been a little bit more time. But that's settling down, and I think we have a better grasp on what our cash flow needs are at this point to make some better decisions. So Sandy's done great, and we've kind of just been in this hold, you know, method, and we'll get a recommendation about the side fund and then start reinvesting some of that money, so it's not all sitting in those lower interest accounts.
Yeah, the $6 million in Rabobank, just that's kind of shocking that you'd have that much basically in operating accounts. Yeah, I mean, and sometimes cities will keep a lot of money there just to try to cover the costs in their analyzed accounts, but it's just not worth it. You're much better off having that money invested in LAIFE and just paying the fees, even though it's an extra expenditure that shows up on your budget. Your money ahead by doing that than trying to keep enough balance at those interest rates to cover your expenses.
Right. And I think when there was the interim director, he had some thoughts and I think ideas on investments. So that kind of, you know, everybody comes in with different ideas, right? So now I'm here and have a whole different perspective. But the idea was to just kind of hold it there until we got a better grasp of cash flow needs and where we were going to go. And we got everything updated, so I had authority to actually do anything as well. And we're there now, so we can proceed.
Okay. So next month we'll see the second quarter.
Next month in March you will get the second quarter investment report. You will have some budget information on metrics and accomplishments and goals. We'll have a discussion on Measure Q budget recommendations for 18-19.
And these are all very welcome developments. We didn't see any of this stuff before, so thank you.
Absolutely.
So the next item is subcommittee updates. We have to be out of here before 6.
I'm part of the subcommittee for public-friendly budget documents, and I've been doing some work on that and ran across a staff report to City Council. This is for the special City Council meeting on January 9th, 2018. This had to do with the upcoming goal-setting workshop. And from what I could tell by reading that staff report, in my opinion, it looks like that staff has already done a public budget calendar. There was in that staff report, there was a good description of the budget process and how the goal setting and the 10-year budget forecast inform the budget process. And there was also the budget calendar that we saw last month. And it's a publicly available document. It's posted online. So my thought is it's somewhat redundant for us to try to move forward on doing a separate budget calendar. I did send copies of that to the two other folks that are on my subcommittee, Walter and Don, to get their feedback, and I'm waiting on that. I just did that today. Okay. So
until we hear back from them. Until you hear back from them, you don't want to check that off your list quite yet?
I don't want to check it off the list until I hear back from them, but I'm thinking that is going to get checked off our list based on the fact that staff has already done it. So that's my report.
Okay, thank you. And I think that's the only subcommittee we have going right now until the CAFR's done. So move on to the next item, future agenda items. Anything that you'd like to have next time?
Whether it's next time or not, I would love to have a better understanding of this community redevelopment issue. If that meant the chamber president would come here as well. But I'm just not understanding, and I think being on the finance committee, I should be able to explain to people in the community exactly how this might work as far as developing all this and what it would cost or it wouldn't cost, because we're going to pay for it by people building things or something. But anyway, I just would like to have a better appreciation for how these grandiose plans might be paid for, how it's going to work.
David, John, anything you'd like?
As far as redevelopment, it's usually kind of a shot in the dark. Somebody says, I have an idea. And they come talk to you, and it takes maybe 4 or 5 months for them to kind of talk it out with you and figure out which way they want to go. And then they'll say, yes, we'll follow this more, with no guarantee they'll finish it. And it, so it's basically a shot in the dark. And if it works, the city makes money. If it doesn't work, then the city has to wait until something happens again.
Okay, so I guess other than that, just the regular agenda items. You're going to have the CAFR, hopefully, and then the investment report. So
that was the one I forgot. So I have CAFR investment, Measure Q budget, and then fiscal year 18-19 budget info. Okay.
All right. So the next meeting is going to be on March 20th. That's still good. Regular meeting, 3:30. Very good. Well, then we are done. We are adjourned.